This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
Welcome in. Stick and Hack Show, the most sophisticated golf show in the free world. I'm your host, Hack. That's your host, Stick. Mike Ryan, Adam Grubb. Thanks for coming into the program.
Hey, buddy.
Stick, how are you?
I'm super.
Good. That's awesome. Were you enjoying the FedEx playoffs?
I am, actually, okay. Surprisingly.
Yeah. Well, I think it sucks. It doesn't make any sense. The math's off, and it's confusing, and they're trying to be too cute and too clever. Well, that's my opinion.
They'll probably tweak it, but...
Because of what I just said?
Sure. Yeah. You can tell yourself that if you
want. Because in my opinion?
Sure.
Perfect. I have more power than I thought. So explain to those that don't understand. It just ended over the weekend. Rory McIlroy won the FedEx Cup.
That's right.
This is his second time winning the FedEx Cup.
It is, yes.
All right, so he's won the FedEx Cup twice. It's $15 million or $400 million or whatever the hell it is. He won that, and he also won the tournament. But coming into the four-day tournament, people had a lead before they even hit a shot.
Yeah, they basically, this year, they tried to handicap it ahead of time, mainly because they want whoever wins the Tour Championship to win the FedEx Cup. So if you look at last year, Tiger won the Tour Championship, but I think Justin Rose actually won the FedEx Cup.
Okay.
So they came up with, all right, we'll start guys off so many under par based on where they are in the FedEx Cup standings. Now, I have no idea how the hell they came up with that formula.
So
would
always be whoever wins the Tour Championship that's will win
what
the
they're
FedEx
going,
Cup?
Yes, that's what they're going
so
for.
So the points and all that stuff just give you an advantage on the last...
Coming into that
coming
final.
Into East Lake.
But it's the same thing because...
That's even dumber. This is actually getting worse with each new rule you give me.
They want it so whoever wins that tournament wins the FedEx Cup. I don't know how else you would do it, to be honest. I don't necessarily like giving people shots ahead of time. I think I do think it's a little dumb. But surprisingly, I was like today watching some of it and I felt like, well, this actually makes sense. But I didn't really like the fact that they're coming into it and like Justin Thomas is 10 under on already, which he's not
right
in that tournament. But okay,
and they're not the whole thing about professional athletes is they don't have any other, they don't have a handicap system where they're where they're already ahead like
right.
in normal golf.
Yeah,
so that's where it got confusing to me.
Yeah,
but I understand the point. And so Rory won, and I remember earlier in the year they were saying that he couldn't win, he couldn't get it done, and that he was at one point. They were saying, hey, this might be the downside of his career.
I don't think so.
Well, no, obviously not. I'm just saying what other people said, like Chamblee.
Oh, wasn't other?
Yeah, it was not me.
People?
I have no...
Okay.
It wasn't me saying that Rory was done. It was other people.
I don't believe you.
You wouldn't. all right, so we have a guest here on the show, Stick and Hack Show, and her name is Chelsea Day. She's a sports psychologist, director of counseling for IU, and she's moving to Ohio State. She's going to be a Buckeye for some reason coming up here shortly. She is going to be talking to us in just a second about the mental game of golf, which honest to God, is the only thing that I think you could talk to somebody about and have this euphoric moment about the game of golf, right?
Yeah.
If somebody can open up your mind and say, hey, just stop doing this or start doing this, and it can literally change your game. The mental game of golf for a stick or for a hack is the most frustrating part of the game.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I mean, it's even, I mean, to this day, I mean, any guy that plays golf, you're struggling in your own head most of the time.
Have you ever had a pressure situation? I mean, because that's really where most amateurs, and whether you're a great player or a hack, it doesn't matter. You have those pressure situations, and some people just, they might be a plus one, they might be a 2-3 handicap.
Yeah.
They get in pressure situations, they get in tournaments, and they just can't get it done. Have you ever had anything like that?
I think
club champion Mike Ryan.
Yeah, I've definitely had those situations. I think the ones that stand out to me in my mind the most are probably when I was younger. Specifically, the one that stands out in my mind the most is probably when I was a freshman in high school, and I qualified to play in sectionals
as a freshman. I bet that made some seniors excited.
Yeah, there was a little Mikey
took a spot.
There was a little controversy around it. And
was it the right decision? I mean, based upon your play?
Yeah, I won a playoff.
What the hell are you going to say?
We had a playoff, and I won. And
oh, really?
That's
so it was legitimately
legitimate
based on your play?
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, and then you know, get out there, play the first hole. I birdie it.
I bet you're jazzed.
Oh.
Are you
I was
hyped?
Pumped. Yeah. I was super pumped, and then I shot 87.
Wheels came off.
So it was a high. It was very high point, and then
so you just you birdied one,
tanked it from there,
and nothing happened.
It was not good from there on out. It was pretty bad.
All right, did you learn from that experience?
Yeah, I definitely did. I kind of learned how to just kind of take things in stride and not get too high or too low. Yeah. That was one of the big takeaways I got from that.
That was an early part of your career for that to. to be implanted in you.
It was,
mine was my, bad. I mean, there's not enough podcast tape in the world to record the amount of times I've crumbled under pressure in golf situations. But probably the worst was a 12-on-12 Ryder Cup style tournament with a bunch of buddies. We're at in South Bend or somewhere in Northern Indiana, Valpo, it doesn't matter. We're somewhere in Northern Indiana playing golf, and we're up, we're down like 8 shots. So it's Ryder Cup, we're down 8 points going into the next day. And it's mathematically, everybody would have to win almost in order for us to take the championship. No money, just some silly trophy and pride, right? Well, the captain put me all the way at the back of the tee times. Why, Mike? Because he didn't think it would be an issue. He thought we were going to get trounced. Yeah. And there was really nothing that positive or negative come out. Put Grubb in the back. Just let him play golf. Let the little kid play golf. There's no reason for him to be part of this, right? It's not gonna come down to him. It's not gonna come down to him. Okay. So it came down to me.
Yeah.
16th hole, I'm up 15th hole, I'm up 3. It's match play, I'm up 3 with 4 to go.
Yep.
And now I see this cavalcade of people and carts coming back to watch me. Okay, because now it's important. If I win, we win.
Ooh.
Okay, yeah. And the rumblings that happened kind of like over the lake, I could hear people talking. If Grubb wins, then we win. Grubb wins, we win. So I heard it. I channeled it, and then I promptly hit 2 balls into the water on 16. Lost that hole. 17. I probably did the exact same thing. Probably no water even was on the hole. Yet I found it. Lost that hole. 18. All I have to do is tie.
Yep.
The hole, and we win. I get up to
T-box.
T-box, thank you.
Yeah, good job. Yeah,
get up to the T-box, and I hit a ball 100 yards straight up in the air and 50 yards to the right into some trees, and is now called the flop driver. You've never seen a driver go higher and shorter in your entire life. And then I kicked it around a little bit, probably hit the wrong ball. It doesn't matter. We lost that hole.
Yeah,
we lost the match.
Yeah, we know where that's going.
And I said I vowed to quit the game, which I obviously did not. And so we bring in now a sports psychologist to really get into the nitty gritty here of my failings and apparently your one failing and your success. Dr. Chelsea Day, sports psychologist, director of counseling for IU, moving to Ohio State. Dr. Day, thank you very much for being part of the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So awesome. You heard that story. You heard Mike's, right? He's a freshman. That's a big moment for anybody.
Yeah.
He crumbled. You heard my moment. I crumbled. There are moments in sports where people crumble and they fail, but I think it happens more often on a daily basis around the world with golf than it does any other sport. The simple question is, why is that?
Find me a popular sport that you have as much time between movements, plays, shots, to think about what you've already done, what you're about to do, and what's at stake, right? So things move fast in other sports. So you have all this time to think about, oh, that was terrible. Don't do that again. And as soon as you think, don't do that again, you do it again. Hmm. And then you have to think about the consequences. Well, I need to make up on this next hole, which doesn't work either. And so we're thinking about, okay, well, I need to shoot this now to be here, and depending on what this person does. So I think it's just because you have all of this time to be in your own head. And there's also, it's kind of you and the course, and maybe one other person who may or may not be talking to you, or three other people who may or may not be talking to you.
Right.
So it's just you and your brain.
It's not, and it's different than tennis, because tennis is quicker and there's, it's reactionary.
Yes.
Tennis has, I mean, that's probably the only other sport I would say that where things are, it's just you in the court or you against somebody. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's reactionary and you're just doing what you're doing. It's athletic. Golf. And I can attest to this. You do not have to be athletic to play golf. You have to have athletic movements, but you don't have to be an athlete. Yeah. Right? You've played against people your whole career.
Can even speak to the point about having time between shots. Well, for me personally, if you're playing like a multi-round tournament, it's the time between rounds even.
Yeah.
You're thinking about, oh, what am I doing tomorrow? What do I got to do in this hole? What do I got to do in that hole? And it's just constant. It's constant. I can tell you when I, specifically this year, playing in our club championship, like going in the last day.
Is this just a way for you to tell us you're a club champion?
No.
Is this what this story is?
It is. It is. You caught me. You caught me, Adam.
No, you do. You think about it all night long, and there's no reason to think about
it. There isn't. You sit there, and you're laying in bed, and you're going, just go to sleep.
What does it matter?
No. And then it's 4 a.m., and you're still laying there staring at the ceiling going. Right.
And you have a bottle of Jack Daniels on your nightstand.
Yeah.
So the time between shots is important because they're in their own head. And this is what people say all the time. Get out of your own head. Stop thinking, right? But golf is a game of thinking. You think your way around the course. You think your way through your swing sometimes. You think your way through different shots and what you want to accomplish, how you want to get it done. And you also think about the double bogey you just had, and now you have to get off that train. You think about what your score will be. Mm-hmm. Hacks do this all the time. I mean, honest to God, on the 11th hole, I'm doing quick math.
Yeah.
If I bogey every hole the rest of the round, I still don't do this, right? Or I will do this. It seems impossible for a thinking man's game to not think.
If you think about the right stuff.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about strategy. We're thinking about where we want to put the ball, or we should be thinking about where am I going to put this ball? Not all of the tedious details. You should be making no adjustments. You come in with what you've got. So you do what you're supposed to do. You stick to the game plan regardless. We often think about what not to do. So don't hit it over here. That's where the ball goes because that's what you're thinking about. It's what you're looking at.
90% of the time.
Yeah, for sure. So it's thinking about the right stuff. You have to think strategically, not emotionally.
Yep.
All right. So meltdowns in professional sports, there's nothing sweeter in the world than watching a professional athlete who's getting paid millions and millions of dollars, sponsorships galore, idolized by millions, hit a shank into the woods or into the hospitality tent, right? Is there anything better for you?
It's good. It's enjoyable.
It's the best.
I mean, it probably doesn't make me a good person, but.
No. I'm sorry. Let me just
but
clarify.
But whatever, it's fine.
Nothing that we do makes us a good person when it comes to that. No, I agree with you. But there is something that is I guess, reassuring as an amateur athlete or as a hack player, weekend player, to watch even the pros make bad shots because that humanizes the game. But there are professional meltdowns of epic proportions. I'm sure, Mike, what comes to your mind when you think of a golf meltdown of epic proportions that people talk about?
John Vandeveld in the British Open.
British Open, yeah. 98, 99, somewhere in the late 90s there.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
He had an eight-shot lead, massive lead, and
it was bad.
Dumped four into the water, and I have none of these facts right. But I'm going to say I'm confident.
We don't.
Sounds totally legitimate. Yeah.
This is where we need a fact checker.
Right. Producer Shane, if he wasn't drunk in the corner, maybe he could help us out. there's that meltdown is still talked about this day. Documentaries about that meltdown.
Yeah.
Because he was going to win.
He was. He was right there, and the last hole was just, it was hard to watch. It was like a train wreck. You could not turn away, but it was just,
Jordan
it was painful.
Jordan Spieth at the Masters. That was more recent.
Yeah.
That happened. So why do amateurs love that so much? And at what point does a professional bring somebody like yourself in and say, how do I get through this? What are the next steps for me to get past this round or this day and move on?
We all remember the Be Like Mike campaign, right? The only way we're going to be like Mike is if he messes up, because we're not ever going to get there. It makes people more human. It makes them more approachable mentally. It makes us think we can actually be like them. I mean, the talent that these guys have is just unbelievable. And so, you know, you can be anything you want, but probably not that. And so it makes it feel like we could be that, right? They make the same mistakes I do. In terms of when people bring in people like me, not as soon as they should, usually.
Yeah.
But more and more you see it happening. I think that you know, we hold a big degree of confidentiality, so we're never going to talk about it. So there's
except
a lot
for,
more.
Except for here.
Except for right now. Yeah, I'm going to share everything.
Right now, this is when we open up the floodgates and we go bad on these people.
Exactly. So unless they're going to tell you, you won't know. So probably a lot more of them have used a lot more of us than we know about. Yeah. But usually it's after the crisis has happened and it's cleanup mode versus preventative and thinking about how do we get ready for that? Because we're all going to mess up. Even, again, the best of the best. So we should be more proactive about it, but, you know.
Yeah.
Are there any books? There's a lot of books I know. One is called Be a Better Player that talks about, but it's very heady, and it's very specific of getting into the play box and what you think of on your way to your course, what you think. And, I mean, it's a good book. I read it. Yeah. I retained 4% of it.
Sure.
literally what I just regurgitated here as I explained the book is all I remember. But there's a lot of players that I think could benefit, depending on how you learn, from either talking to somebody like yourself, because you work with golfers a lot, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so there is a spot and a space for someone like you to come in and say, even for Mike, if he was having trouble in the championships, right? He does great in the men's leagues. He does great in all these other things and wins some money. He always 72, 73s right around there, 68, 69 maybe every now and then. And then he gets into these big tournaments and then things go bad. Mm-hmm. He could come to you and say, hey, in this upcoming season, this is where I struggle. What do you tell somebody who takes it seriously, is expecting great things out of himself, and is struggling in the big moments?
There are a lot of great books. I tend to see those as kind of one size fits all, and I don't think anything is one size fits all.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to figure out kind of what's the root at what we're getting at. The books are great. They're inspirational. They're good people that have good ideas, and if we read the book that's not a good fit for us, it's not going to work, right? We're going to be trying something and like, this doesn't work. Sports psychology is crap. And so it's really figuring out, okay, what's at the root of this? Is it the pressure situations? Is it that I am too much in my head? Is it that I'm too distracted? Is it that I'm too kind of hyped up? Where are we at? And so we kind of start with that and figure out what are the little strategies. I'm a big believer in like small changes produce big results. And so usually it's just little tweaks of our thought processes. Most people that are thinking about using sports psychology have played golf long enough that any error, it's not a physical error. Like your arms, your hips, you know what to do. Yeah. It's all the mental stuff that causes you to change some of that and it goes awry.
Yeah.
Now you had said something about don't make any changes in the course mid round.
Yeah. Terrible idea.
Yeah, it is.
And that happens
it's awful.
All the time, especially with any high handicap, they will make an adjustment on the range. Because they watched watched a YouTube video driving to the course, and then they got there and they're like, hey, I'm going to try to do this now. They hit 16 balls. It works. They get out on the course. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now what? They're in their head, and that doesn't work. So I got to go back to my old thing. And they're on hole four, and they're just constantly thinking, and there's no fluidity to their swing, to their thoughts. Right. And you're probably your best rounds that you can remember, Mike.
Yeah.
You had nothing going on upstairs. Right. And I don't mean that to be funny.
Yeah.
You literally, you're just playing.
Yeah. I think obviously when I play my best, I'm sticking to a single shot flight, number one. So I'm not trying to hit a draw or a cut. I'm just saying, all right, I'm going to hit a cut all day.
Every time. Yeah.
That's all I'm hitting. And that's typically when I'm most consistent and I'm my best rounds, where I'm just trying to make the same motion every time and you're not trying to do something different, you know. But that's typically what I have found for me that works the best, is just focusing on knowing, all right, if I've got to hit a shot and it's under pressure, is just focusing on the things that I can control, you know. I want to have one swing thought at a time, not three different things. Like one thing, there's one thing that I want to focus on and make sure I do. And it's typically for me, it's firing my hips, making sure I start my downswing with my hips. That's the one thing that I always try and focus on. And if I do that, I typically get results.
Let's go to the mental expert.
Would you like my job? That's you're dead on.
No,
that's,
he can't. Yeah. He's got club champion responsibilities for the next year.
Right. That's very important.
Unfortunately, can't.
Sorry, I have too many.
He's got a parade. He has
too many engagements I have to attend.
That's fair. That's a very important role.
But no, that's a good advice, right?
Yeah.
That swing thought, is that something you would tell a player?
Absolutely, all the time. That's how we get out of our body, or get out of our head and into our body.
Yeah.
It's all about being in your body and not in your head. Let your body do its job, control the controllables. There's all these really great little cliches we can say, but it all boils down to focus on what you're going to do. What is it that I'm going to do? Not 80 things I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Find one thing to think about. Yeah. Because, when you think about 30 things, a swing is a quick movement.
Right.
Yeah. We try to put too many thoughts in there. It becomes jerky. It becomes unnatural, and nothing goes where it's supposed to.
I think one of the, you were talking about books earlier. One of probably the one book from a mental aspect that I think probably helped me the most that I read like 30 pages of, and that was it. But I actually got something out of it. Was it's called Golf's Not a Game of Perfect, and it's by Bob Rotella, with Dave Pelz. And it's just talking about it, just the name of the book says everything you need to know. Is I think people focus on trying to be perfect all the time in golf, and golf is like so far from being able to ever be perfect at it that it's just you lose yourself in all of the thoughts like you're talking about. You think about 30,000 different things trying to be perfect, and then you're not even near good.
Can you practice pressure situations like Mike's talking about? Can you get and we talk a lot about the professional athlete here or the top athlete, but somebody who's a 22 handicap and is trying to get down to a 15, that's a pretty big jump, but it's more doable in my mind than a 8 to a 1 or an 8 to a scratch. There's the same distance there, but it's a much different mentality of an effort. What would you tell a high handicapper who is struggling with their game or struggling with a certain part? The other thing, and this is a 14-part question here, I apologize. The other thing...
Write these down.
...is that each day is different for a hack. Mm-hmm. For a stick, he might not putt okay, but he's still putting his normal game. But a hack player, he or she can have a great day hitting the ball and a terrible day around the green and then flip the next day. Mm-hmm. Where does that come from? And how do I fix that? This is basically a ruse for me to understand how the hell to fix my game.
Well, we're going to need a lot more time.
All of this is just for me.
We are. Weeks.
I think that...
Thank you, Mike.
I don't think there's a way to practice pressure situations. We're not that gullible. And I don't actually think that's important. I think we actually need to practice calming down. We need to practice being less affected by pressure. So it's by having some type of routine where I can control my level of arousal. So am I over nervous? Is the adrenaline pumping? My swing's going to look different. If I'm practicing in low pressure situations, being relaxed, staying relaxed, I'm going to be able to replicate that then in those pressure situations. Yeah. So it's more about practicing staying mentally relaxed than replicating pressure situations. In terms of different aspects of the game, I don't believe in momentum. I think that momentum is a cop-out. It's an excuse for us to give up on something. So, I'm putting terrible today. No, you're not. You had a few bad putts. If you decide you're putting terrible, it's a good excuse to keep putting terrible and not pay attention to it and not take control of those thoughts. So it's that we got into that momentum of I can scapegoat putting, and now I'm driving great because I'm relaxed, because I'm only thinking about the putt when I get down there. I don't have to think about this drive because I'm already thinking about how to salvage the putt. And so I've gotten out of my head on driving. And then if the reverse happens the next day, it's because I've scapegoated my driving, right? And that's what I'm thinking about every time. I'm overthinking it. And when I'm putting, then all I'm thinking about is my next drive. And so it's a way for us to kind of scapegoat a piece of our game.
It's genius.
It's pretty genius. It is pretty genius. It's also a slam directly at me.
Directly. You see, I was just staring at you the whole time.
I know. You didn't even know Mike was here. All right. So this is a question I think Mike and I have. It doesn't matter if you're incredible or okay. You do have the same thoughts at some point. In those pressure situations or even in something that isn't even pressure, but you pull it on yourself. So you're over water. A par 3 or a 150-yard shot that is over water and the green is just over there. Bunkers, right around the green. All you see in your mind is the water. And all you're saying to yourself most of the time is what you said earlier, don't hit it in the water. Don't hit it right. And I don't care how great you are. Mm-hmm. Even top professionals probably think at some point, oh, no, I can't be left here. Now, their reaction is much different. Sure. Their caddy's saying, don't go left. And he's like, okay, fine, I won't, right? But in an amateur's head, don't go left is that's the kill zone mm-hmm. at that point, right? So how do you get past that? And what is your advice?
Well, you don't stare at the water, which is also what someone's doing, right? I'm staring at the water thinking, oh, my God, don't put the ball there. It's all about looking at, we want to focus on visually, where's the ball going to land? That's the only thing that matters to look at. Where's the ball going to land and how am I going to get it there? And then it's interrupting those thoughts, finding a process. I'm really into mindfulness. I think mindfulness is the key to golf. And so that's all about coming into the moment and saying, okay, what am I focusing on right now? What's my swing thought? I've seen exactly where the ball is going to go. That's the only thing I'm looking at. And all I'm thinking about is what to do with my body right now. Uh-oh. You don't do that, for sure.
So good.
I don't even know what to say.
We're such a professional operation here. It's amazing.
He's taking a picture. He was trying to do something good. That's what sucks about it. All right.
It's multitasking.
I love it.
We can cut through that. That's fine.
It's interrupting that thought. I recognize, being able to recognize, I'm thinking about the water. I'm looking at the water. Stop doing that. But refocus on what am I looking at and what am I going to do right now? What needs to happen right now in these next 20 seconds? And that's our way to back that out. The thoughts are going to happen. We don't want to deny that. We don't want to be like, oh, don't think about it, because then you think about it, right, mm-hmm. 18 times stronger. Yeah. But it's recognizing it, moving on to what are you actually going to do here, even if you don't believe that's what you're going to do, because you might not. But
yeah,
what about can't hit the 80-yard shot? So
or chip.
Right.
How about that?
Right. Or is that a – I'm sorry. Are you looking right at yeah. me? Or maybe can't chip.
He had some issues last Friday.
Yeah, I did. It was one of those where it crept into my mind, mm-hmm. and it stayed there for 16 holes, and I physically couldn't do it. And there's a magic word called the yips. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there yet, mm-hmm. but it was creeping in to where I was nervous. Yeah. There's no reason to be nervous. I'm 40 years old, and we weren't playing for any money. It was the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah.
There was no reason to be nervous about something so stupid and so silly, but I was.
Sure.
But there's certain shots that people can't hit, and as soon as they get to an 80-yard shot, if it's over water, it doesn't matter, mm-hmm. they're already mad at themselves because mm-hmm. they left themselves in 80 yards in. What are those pre-shot thoughts that can get somebody out of that rut?
Yes, yeah, so that's that narrative piece, right? I've kind of scapegoated this. Oh, I'm not good at this, because it also reduces your risk. Because then, if it does go bad, you're like, well, see, I'm on a chip, or I can't hit that 80 yarder. You know, I think it's really focusing on we're capable of anything. And what's really actually cool about golf versus other sports is each shot is completely, wholly, totally independent of the previous shot and of the next shot. That we've seen people mm-hmm. get out of some wild spots, right? Yeah, because each shot is independent versus sports where one pass affects the next pass, affects kind of the play and the momentum. We have to be able to compartmentalize that each shot is independent. It doesn't matter how I hit this shot on this same hole yesterday. That has nothing to do with anything. What am I doing?
I couldn't disagree. Right? I couldn't disagree more.
Well, it shouldn't. Here's where we're starting with some of our problems.
That's right.
But it's this independence that this is a different shot. It is unique to right now, to today, to this round. And how do I stay focused on that?
So we're talking now to Dr. Chelsea Day, sports psychologist, director of counseling for Indiana University, and moving to Ohio State this coming season. Mike, there's got to be something that you need to know. This can't just all be about my shortcomings here, right?
I'm okay with talking about your shortcomings only. I think that's...
All right, so why do I hit it great on the range and then forget how to play golf 5 seconds later? Okay, that's one. And we'll get to a couple of member, some classic questions here in just a second, but I want to talk about the confidence one more time. Mm-hmm. When things are going great, they're going great. When things are going bad, they're going bad. How important is a partner in that? So a lot of times you have you're playing with somebody, whether it's a buddy or whether it's a teammate. Can you lean on them, and what can you say to your player that you're playing with and say, hey, can you, if this starts to go bad here, mm-hmm. tell me this. If this starts to go great, mm-hmm. tell me this. Is that important for amateur golf?
It can be, but it's, you have to know what you need. So with our golfers at IU, we talked a lot with coach. Here's what I need. I want you to walk with me a few holes, or I want you to not like wave as I'm walking by, or I want you to give me a correction, or I want you to ask me what I want for dinner because I want to think not about golf. But so you have to have the awareness of here's what I need from that person and then be able to say, hey, I need you to help me in this way. And it's immensely helpful because, again, when we're stuck in our own head, having that person, and for some, again, it's totally non-golf related. Ask me where I got my shoes. For some people, it's if you talk about anything but golf, I will be so distracted that it's not going to go well. So it can be important as long as you've spent the time identifying what you actually need and you're not just like, hey, do something when I get frustrated. Can you like fix that? It's obviously not going to go real well.
So you're saying there's something, was there something last year I could have done in Labor Day to?
Yeah, you asked like, for another cart at one point.
That's probably true.
Was that the wrong thing?
Was that wrong?
No.
But should I not have done that?
But I think that part of you and most good players, they and respectful players don't want to get involved in someone else's game unless asked.
Yeah.
And even then, he doesn't know what to really say. Oh, keep going, partner.
You got it.
You got it, bud.
You're the best.
You're okay with you this rock. Game. You know, you're costing me thousands of dollars with every shitty shot. Yeah. But right now, you've got it. I think that's where there's that little mix of, okay, but, you know, just here's what I need. Yeah. But isn't that thinking about things too much, too, at some point?
If you're in the weeds during the round, yeah, for sure. This is where planning comes in, right? So we've thought about it. We know what we need. Yeah. You know, if you're someone who wants a cheerleader, the last thing I want in any sporting endeavor I do is someone to be like, you got this. Like, I'll just look at you and be like, I'm over this.
Yeah.
I want someone who's going to kind of be tough or say nothing or a technical thing. But some people, you have to know that, right? Yeah. So if you're, you know, on the third hole and you're like, hey, I think what I need is X. And then in hole six, you're like, actually, that wasn't it. I've really been thinking since then. Yeah, it's thinking too much. You're doing too much.
Right.
So yeah. It's that pre-preparation stuff.
Yeah, I find there are certain things that I'm not necessarily not okay with, but that I think probably throw me off. Like one thing, like if I've got partners that want to help read my putts, I'm not as good at that for some reason. I don't know if it's just, it gets in my mind. If there's more than one opinion in my head about where I'm going to hit a putt, that's probably a problem for me. But I try and do kind of the same thing when I play with anybody. I try and say, do you want me to read your putts? Do you not? So I kind of know ahead of time whether I'm like going to be spending the day helping them read putts or not, or when do they need my help? And I kind of try and communicate that way, but it doesn't always work out, as was evidenced by last year's Labor Day tournament.
God, I cannot wait till that conversation's over. I really can't. That's going to be a great day. That's going to be a great day.
Hey, after this year, you know, it's over.
I know.
Unless I draw you again.
And then immediately withdraw from the tournament. all right, so the age-old question, in the middle of the round, why do I play this game? Why do I torture myself with this game? I hate this game, right? You hear it, and people and grown men, me included, you included, get frustrated at sometimes to a boiling level, and you go afterwards like, oh my God, why? What does it matter? Why is it that important? I'm going to play again. I'm not selling my clubs on Craigslist. I'm going to continue playing golf.
Yeah.
Why am I so mad? Is it that constant need to be better? Is it the constant need for just your own self-confidence and self-worth? I mean, why do people say they're going to quit the game and then don't quit the game? Why do they hate golf so much and love it?
We don't like being bad at things. I hate being bad at things. So in a moment when we think we're bad at something, we don't want to do it anymore. Or any of those things you mentioned. We're embarrassed. We're frustrated. We feel like we've invested so much, or we've been trying so hard this new technique and it's not working. What's the point? If that doesn't work, nothing will work. But it's like marathoners, right? Like, never doing this again. This is awful. And then afterwards, like, I can't wait when we sign up for the next one. There's a lot of sports that are that way, right? Where in the midst of it, it's kind of painful in some way. But you get to the end, you're like, I have perspective now. We make decisions for now us, not future us, very well. So like now me, who's just hit four terrible shots, it's like, this sucks. I'm done. This is stupid. What a waste of time. And you get to the end, you've salvaged it, and you're like, oh, all right, well, next time.
Right. What's the saying? That's the shot that keeps bringing you back.
Yeah.
So it's typically on 16 or 17, and after you've had a terrible round and you hit a great shot or great, you know, 30 foot banger putt, and you're like, oh, I guess I can't play back. This game.
Right. Because you've given up a little bit, right?
Right.
So you're not as stressed.
Yeah.
You've relaxed. You're resigned. Exactly. You've stopped counting. You're just swinging the club. And once you let go and just swing the club, things go really well.
Yeah. That's what I've heard.
Someday we'll get you there.
I've not experienced that firsthand, but I've heard that that's the way to go.
Keep at it.
All right. So let's get into the clubhouse here. This is Get to Know You. Okay. So this is Get to Know Chelsea Day, sports psychologist and director of counseling. These comes from our members, okay? The Stick and Hack members. Would you be invisible in your current time or invisible in the past?
Like my past life or like past time in history?
Good clarification.
Yep. Let me go to producer Shane. Producer Shane, where are we at? We are in the any past.
Any past. Yeah, I would say any past.
Any past. So you can be invisible today, anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world.
Yeah. Or you could be invisible in the past, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
I would say in the past. Okay. I feel like I could learn some things.
That's good. That's a smart answer.
I agree with that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would just go back to just...
I'd just find out who shot JFK.
I think that's pretty well documented. I don't think you have to be. Oh.
Is it?
Okay. Oh, my.
Is it Adam?
Oh, my. This show's taken quite a turn. All right. What makes you laugh the most?
Dogs. Dogs are so stupid, and they're just wonderful, and they don't get their feelings hurt.
Yeah.
I've never had a guest pander more to Mike in my life.
Love it.
Than you are.
Yeah.
All right. What is your go-to karaoke song?
Oh man, it's usually '90s rap of some sort.
Yes.
That's
awesome.
Occasionally some TLC. If I can do some "Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls," I feel good about that.
Yeah.
But I'm never going to turn down a '90s rap song.
Right. Well, who would?
Right.
Really? I know.
Well, your TLC, your favorite?
No, they're just really karaokeable.
Mm.
They don't go too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And at varying levels of coherence, you can still complete it without full embarrassment.
I like
that. Which feels
That happens
solid.
From time to time.
Occasionally.
So have you done that before? Have you belted that out?
I have, at the Monkey's Tail, Broad Ripple.
Oh, wow, very local reference.
Nice, love it.
Very local,
For those of you not in the Indianapolis area, yes. Broad Ripple, Monkey's Tail is where everyone makes terrible decisions.
It is the karaoke spot.
Well, Chelsea, thank you so much for being a part of the Stick and Hack show. Any last parting thoughts for Stick and for myself, the Hack?
Mostly for Hack.
And for our audience on how to enjoy the game of golf more.
Stay in the moment. Focus shot by shot and just like chill out and relax a little bit.
Yeah.
All right.
It's supposed to be fun, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a game. It's called a game.
Yeah.
I disagree. Again. Chelsea, thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It very much. Join us at stickandhack.com for more of this. In fact, I know that there's going to be some articles and some other blogs and some things coming out here around this game, because around the mental game of golf, because it's just such a cool topic that I know everybody would love to have. Also, sign up for The Break, our weekly newsletter, and be part of Stick and Hack Nation. Mike, thank you so much for your time again today.
Hey, man. I'm here for
and,
you.
What time is the parade tomorrow, the Champions Parade?
It's like 8.
8 a.m.?
Yeah, wow. It's early. I've got to be there, Dave. I don't think it starts till like 9:30.
You got to get up early for the Champions. Jamie's deal. Mike, good to see you. Chelsea, again, thank you so very much for being here. We'll see you in a couple weeks on the Stick and Hack Show. Thanks, everybody.
All right, peace out, guys.
The Stick and Hack Show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.